This week on our special bonus episode, we are sitting down with Mayor Don Walters and Council-at-Large Brian Ashton.
Welcome, guys.
Hello.
Thank you.
And thank you for sitting down with us. So this is, it was a shocker for a lot of us, this upcoming ballot. Everybody who's currently, or almost everybody who's currently in office, you're running unopposed. How long have you served, Mr. Mayor, as mayor, and Brian on council? And what are you hoping to see in your next term?
Oh, if you want me to go first, I'm in actually my 24th year, so 12 on council, and I'm in my 12th year as mayor, so 12 and 12. We have a lot of projects that are starting or going to be starting soon, and then some that are happening in the future. And I'm running again. I'll be on the ballot in November, unopposed, obviously, but I'm not one to start something and not see it through. I'm pretty hands-on. So when you see a project, I was involved in that from the start to the end. Now, I don't go out and tell them how to pour concrete, obviously, but in the design work, I'm extremely hands-on, not to the point of telling the experts what to do, because I'm not an expert in anything, but design work and things like that, or even the timing on a lot of these things. So I have to run again to see a lot of these projects through.
I'm newer. I've done this now for 3 years. This will be my fourth year. So I'll be running for my second term this upcoming fall. I think echoing some of what the mayor said, we have so many projects right now that I want to see kind of through. We got, you know, the new fire station coming along. We have a major road project here in Ward 8 coming along. We have new electric building. I think it's a very positive, it's a very forward-thinking time. And then on the horizon too, we're also looking at Bailey Road and State Road as far as, I think those are kind of the next two steps as to what's going to occur within the city as well too.
Out of curiosity, what's going to happen with the old service complex over there?
Well, the reason we moved to begin with was we're doing a huge, massive electrical upgrade. What triggered them having to move, because we need to build two new substations behind the old electric department, and that's okay. Where all their storage is. So they have pole storage and transformers, and everything was there. We needed to get all that out of there, and we're going to even need their building. So two huge substations to do upgrades. The plan is, without getting too much into the weeds, but we want to bring in a whole new feed into the city for redundancy, 138 kilovolt, which is the massive lines that come in and feed the whole city. We have kind of 1.5 feeds right now. We want to have a whole nother feed, and First Energy will bring that in. But we need two substations to accommodate that. So that was the beginning of all that, is moving our electric department out of that location.
Is increasing that capacity going to help with some of the power outages that we've experienced over the past 5 or 6 years?
It will, for sure. So the one part is bringing the new feed in. That's 138 kV. And then we're going to tie all the substations together with 69 kilovolts, which will be able to, it'll allow us to reroute power effortlessly, almost instantaneously. So if a part of the city gets hit with high winds and there's a lot of transformers that need replaced or breakers that are out, we can reroute a lot of that and just isolate to a small area. So it may not help with power outages when the winds come through, but it's definitely going to help get people on quicker.
Gotcha. When is that going to be completed?
Well, there's a holdup with all this, and it really gets into the heat. But I'll just say this. So the old abandoned rail line, which used to run along Roberts School, it splits off from the main two tracks. It runs parallel down through downtown, but as you head north, it splits off. We're trying to acquire that, and that's where the feed will run, but also that's where we'll add a multi-purpose trail so we can tie into the Freedom Trail up north. There's a big sticking point because it's owned by Metro RTA. They were granted that from the FTA, Federal Transportation Authority, Federal Rail Authority, and so they want their money back because they never did anything with it. So it's appraised for over $12 million, and we're trying to find a way to acquire that property.
That sounds like it's a challenge.
Yeah, so it could happen in the next few years, or it could be 10 years. It's all depending on getting this property.
One of our city's mottos is life is better here. So in general, here in 2025, Why do you think Cuyahoga Falls portrays that?
I'll take this one first, if that's okay. I think it's the diversity of options we're affording to our citizens between the parks, between the walkability of certain areas, as well as developing the business, developing the housing. I think it's quickly becoming a place where people around here want to live. They want to shop. They want to spend money and be entertained. And we give that option for everyone, from young families with our Parks and Rec department up until our senior citizens with Cork and the improvements we've made there. So it's that variety. It's that diversity. It's something I love. It's something I sought for in a school district when I decided where to bring my kids myself. And I'm very proud of it.
I can add to that just quickly. So I call ourselves a big, small city. At 51,114, if you're counting, we're the perfect size. And the reason I say that is, if you're a little tiny city like Munro Falls or Talmadge is small, it's tightly knit. Everyone knows everyone, and it's a great, great feeling to live there, but they don't have the revenue to do the great things that we can do here. And then if you're a large city like Columbus, they have the revenue, but I will never see you again. It's a million people. It's just too big. Or Cleveland, or even for me, Akron is just too big of a city. We're the perfect size. So we get the best of both worlds. We have huge revenue due to our tax base and all the jobs that are here. But it still feels like a small town where you see block parties and neighbors know each other, and the 26 neighborhood parks, and our response time, police and fire, is 4 minutes. You're not going to get that in central Ohio and farmland. And then it's safe and it's affordable. Lowest utility rates in northern Ohio. So we really have all the amenities here within minutes. We have the national park you can drive to in 5 minutes. Wausau Music Center, the beautiful river. There's just so much here, and it's affordable and it's friendly. So I feel life is better here.
I agree. As a resident since 1995,
yeah.
I'm down with all that. It's grown a lot. It's changed a lot.
It's changed a lot. For the better. Yeah, since we first moved here in 1995, it's changed significant amounts. It's a different city.
Yeah, completely different.
For the better.
Look and feel.
You bring up the parks, which is an excellent topic. One of the big projects in the Falls over the last couple of years has been the Gorge Dam. There's been recent blocking of federal funds, which has kind of stopped that process. Can you say anything about where we are in the process so far and whether this project will ultimately get finished?
I think it will, but you're right. The money was frozen. So the majority of this is being paid by the federal EPA. We kicked in a tiny, tiny bit. The Ohio EPA is paying a little bit, Akron, but the majority of it is the federal EPA, and that money is frozen. What's ironic is they finally were ready to start work. And this is about a month ago. They had sent us a message that they're going to make a big announcement that they awarded the contract for the sediment removal. It was delayed forever, and they finally awarded a contract, and that's the first step. So as you know, Cascade is all prepared to accept the sediment. They needed to have a contract. They did. And now all of a sudden it came to a screeching halt. So the problem is projects get more expensive the longer they're delayed. Incrementally. So this started out as a $75 million project, and it's north of $170 million. And if it gets delayed, it's not going to get cheaper. So they're finally ready to start. Now it's on hold. I think that money will be released. So I think it's going to get done. It's about a two and a half year process, 18 months for the sediment, about another year to bring down the structure, and then the remediation of all the plantings and things. But I think it'll happen.
Is the park still? I probably know portions of the park are closed because they're getting ready for the sediment remediation. Is our side of the park still open? Is it going to remain open?
It's open for now, but I believe it's going to close when the work starts.
Okay.
So the other side of the river, obviously Akron's doing their sewer project.
Yes.
And we're going to end up tying into that as well. We paid them a bunch of money to get ready for us. We're going to reroute our sewer line all the way around the gorge instead of right through the middle of it. And that's going to be massive in the coming years. But so they actually built their project to accept ours. And so all our stuff from really that whole half of the city is going to flow through a new line into Akron's line.
Is the federal funds freezing? Does that have any effect on any of that projects?
No, because Akron's paying for all of that.
Oh, okay. Everything. Yeah.
Okay.
Do we know if the any of the like legal rulings to unfreeze funding affect those EPA funds?
I just read today that they did. So, but again, I'm not an attorney, and I don't know where that stands. But yeah, the federal court had unfrozen the funds. Same with our HUD. We get CDBG money from HUD about 600 and some thousand a year. And we were worried that that's going to be frozen as well, which it was. And then the district court had said that you cannot freeze those funds. So we think that that'll be okay. But as far as the dam, I don't know. Brian's the attorney. He would be able to give us advice on it.
And who do you guys talk to find that out? Who are your contacts?
Well, the EPA in this instance for the dam, we have a HUD rep for CDBG and the HUD funds.
Life has been challenging, but you know, I think it's the city. We control what we can control, and we're gonna keep doing that around here. But there's difficulties now all suddenly that didn't exist 6 months ago.
What other impacts can we see? So we talked about the gorge. What other kinds of impacts are we gonna see locally from these executive orders?
We don't know. I mean, the mayor brought up the CDBG money. I mean, that's such an amazing asset for so many of our citizens that struggle with some issues that we can help. And they've also, and I apologize if I didn't speak, but we've used those funds to help get playground equipment for kids with special needs. I think part of the natatorium doors were paid by that money. I could be wrong, Mayor. You could correct me. But so many of those services that we're using to help those individuals in our community that need it most. And right now it's okay, but certainly that's a fear for everyone.
We're not over reliant on grants and things like that. So really right now, the short term is how many people, federal workers, are going to lose their jobs that live in Cuyahoga Falls. And now all of a sudden they're thrown into the unemployed world and trying to find work and feed their family. So we don't know the fallout of this yet, but it's pretty far reaching. But as far as us financially, we're going to be totally fine with our local dollars.
Okay, so our city budget doesn't have a significant portion that's federally supplied.
No, okay. We're in very good shape financially.
And that was one of the things, like I know when the dam comes down, that I've heard you say repeatedly that this is like the only class 5 rapids that'll be east of the Mississippi for like a 2.5 mile stretch. And that's gonna be huge. And the businesses that have developed here, and also with the Valley Master Plan, you know, of building these attractions for people to come and visit here, even with those ideas or things being on hold for now, I think the businesses that we have that have established, you know, are still going to be, you know, a good draw. You know, it'll just get better when the dam comes down. But I think we're positioned in a good spot where it's not going to hurt or affect us as much, you know. We can hold for a little bit to see when the funding does come back and what does happen. But eventually, I think it's really going to blossom, you know, down the road when that does come down.
Yeah, it's been there over 100 years. So I guess a couple more years probably won't hurt. But if you know the kayaking world, it's basically have kayak, will travel. and they will be here. So
yeah.
Right. It's about a half mile of challenging whitewater, and we'll have over 2 miles when the dam comes down. And that's just unheard of.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see a demand, increased demand for Airbnbs and for hotel rooms and camping areas.
Mm-hmm. With some of the federal executive orders and all these changes happening, how will the city ensure that the diversity, equity, and inclusion programs are still maintained despite all these, dare I say, ridiculous restrictions?
Yeah, we try and always do what's right, always have since I've been mayor, and we'll continue to do that. So regardless of what title you give it or programs you give it, in our hiring, the way we treat people, helping residents, absolutely everything that we do is inclusive. So nothing on our end is going to change. And when you hear a lot of these terms that are banned, and I feel bad for the schools, because what are they supposed to do? And, you know, their funding can be cut. And it's scary for the schools. And I'm glad that they have some really smart people making those decisions on how to navigate that. But as far as the city goes, we're just going to continue to do the right thing.
Yeah, it's really tough. It's scary. I work at the Cleveland Clinic, and, you know, we've had a huge, you know, diversity, equity, inclusion push in the last 5 years. I work in clinical research, and a lot of our clinical trials are really underrepresented with folks, people of color, LGBTQIA. And so, you know, up until January 20th, the federal government was rolling out initiatives, the NIH was rolling out initiatives to increase diversity and inclusion in these clinical trials so people, you know, can get the medicines and the treatments that they need. And to, you know, it's really disheartening. It's really scary to see how many people this will hurt. I'm glad that I'm glad that our city is already a welcoming city and that won't be changing. Yeah,
we are fortunate. A lot of people aren't so fortunate.
Yeah.
Along the same lines of restrictions, what measures will you take to protect vulnerable populations who are being profiled, who are immigrants, who I know a lot of people have said, you know, some cities have said, you know, we're no longer sanctuary cities, or if they never were, and unfortunately that's the problem.
Yeah, do you think we're going to have a problem with ICE?
I do not. I think that, so we get advice from the International Institute, and then we also, through the county, I had asked Executive Shapiro to put together a call with all the mayors and bring in some immigration attorneys just to do a Q&A, just so we know a little bit more. And so if we're asked by some of our residents or some of our employers, large employers, that may have a lot of international newcomers working there, at least we can put them to the right place to get those questions answered. Because again, I'm not an expert on everyone here, but I don't see us having a problem. Now, it looks like Springfield, Ohio, which, as you know, is not Springfield Township, but Springfield, yeah. Ohio, they're going to be in the headlines again, and it could get really ugly there. So I think here our people are well established, and, you know, they're residents, they're homeowners, they're employed, and I just don't see a focus on Cuyahoga Falls. But again, our police are trained to treat everyone equally and everyone fairly, so there won't be any profiling by us.
Awesome.
I agree, and I would like to chime in too a little bit. You know, I see it also with my day job working in the courts. I think one of the things we underestimate is the mental impact that some of these individuals are going through now, fearful of what's going to happen to them. And both the city and the county is doing stuff that sounds simple, but so important, and making sure everyone's a licensed driver, making sure that, you know, they feel comfortable and safe using city apparatuses and city services. And we're going to, you know, continue to try to do that in spite of some of those understandable fears as well with everyone too, because we all benefit. If someone's not a licensed driver, that leads to headaches for everyone. And so we want to make sure that people understand that, you know, those services are still going to be available to them here.
Good to know.
How will city council communicate with residents? And this is pretty much something of, you know, how have they been doing so far, but any potential impacts of executive orders or in the city's response, or just, you know, other important news that the city has to get out, city council has to get out to constituents. How does city council the rest?
I'll take that. You know, we do have the new app now, and that's been going very well. I personally use that myself quite a bit. I frankly struggle with this myself. I feel like it used to be, even when I started on city council, it seemed like Facebook was certainly a way to communicate and to share information rapidly. And that feels like it's gone by the wayside to me a little bit. I still think the good old fashioned, I know a lot of city councilors, including myself, do newsletters. I think that's still an effective tool. It's a little bit maybe old fashioned, but it seems to be working better than some other forms. Nowadays, with so many different communication devices and so many forms to communicate with, it's offered new challenges, but that's, you know, a blessing and a curse at the same time.
I do like the city newsletter. Our city council person, Susan Fogel Spinner, she puts one out maybe twice a year, and it's really handy. And I've seen, like, on Talk of the Town or in the various Facebook groups, people saying, oh, I got mine, or I didn't get mine. And so I think it is popular.
The one the school system puts out is also nice, too.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's nothing to you guys, but
that is, I mean, my, I won't say take on that is you're never going to, unfortunately, you guys are in the position where you're never going to please everybody. Because there are people who criticize that, oh, it's a waste of money to put a newsletter out, but then it's also, you know, where do I get my information from? You know, they're like, well, I don't want to go and look on the city's website or download an app or do this, but yet I want to be spoon-fed the information. You know, it's like part of being a citizen is to go and research and find some of that stuff. Mm. I mean, you guys actively put out, you know, stuff on the app. I mean, I have the app downloaded and stuff comes out. You know, I've seen the newsletters come through, but it's like, what more do you want to do for these people? You know, and unfortunately, you guys are going to be the targets of any criticisms. And some of these people don't want to do the due diligence, you know? So it's like, what do you say to those people or how do you handle those people? But
it's a good little thing. I work out at the Natatorium and a couple of months ago we did the men's locker room and there was a couple of gentlemen and I rarely say anything, but there was a couple of gentlemen complaining. They're like, oh, they shut down the locker room without telling anyone. And I said, well, did you read the sign on the door? And he's like, no, I didn't read that. I'm like, did you read the three emails they sent you? And they're like, I don't read my emails. And I said, well, did you see the big sign on the wall when we walk in? They're like, no. It's like, you know, that's sometimes an example. But that being said, as a city council member, it doesn't matter, though. It's still my job to make sure that I try to get that out there and try to meet people where they are. It just, like I was saying earlier, it's just changing rapidly and trying to get my hands on it or grasp it. It's sometimes a good intellectual challenge.
Well, I'm all out of questions on my list.
Well, that was quick and easy.
Those are pretty hard questions.
what kind of information and future plans do you guys have for State Road, particularly the southern area?
Really, Stephen? Really?
In-depth traffic study, and they'll look at not just the whole corridor, but also portions of it on what may work in different sections, whether it can go to three lanes, stay to four. I can't answer that because I'm not a traffic engineer. So we'll see what they have to say. There's tons of benefits to a road diet, to traffic calming measures. The number one by far is pedestrian safety. So it's easier to cross three lanes than four. And sometimes you'll even have a center refuge where you're crossing one at a time or one and a half. So safety is paramount. And number two is being business friendly. And I can send anyone here, there's plenty of newsletters and things from the DOT on down that'll show that traffic calming helps businesses. And takes me back to when I was on city council when Portage Crossing was being discussed. And as you know, the developers, Bob Stark, who did Crocker Park, and he has billion-dollar projects in Florida, the guy knows what he's doing. And he said to all of us, and the mayor at the time, if you can't narrow this to two lanes, I will not build anything because it will fail. And it's all because of the traffic calming. You want people to slow down and see what's there. Mm-hmm. And I guess to contrast that, let's say we didn't narrow it to three lanes. Let's say we made it eight lanes at 50 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, people are flying on through. So obviously that's an extreme. I'm being facetious, but if you take it the other direction too, and you can still flow traffic. But again, that's what the engineers will tell us. It may not be possible with the traffic counts, but it could very well be. And so there's a lot of research on there. If you really read on the internet, they'll show from reputable sources that have done all the research that traffic calming is usually a good thing.
It certainly makes sense. I
just saw a terrible car crash on State Road this week. I can't remember exactly. I think it was by the KFC. And I just think...
Somebody hit Rocco's too, went right into the...
It's already 25 miles per hour, so we can't slow it down.
Nobody goes 25 miles an hour on State Road. They just don't.
Yeah, but if it went down to that, you know, three lanes, maybe that would enforce that slowness.
That would slow people down to 25, 30 miles an hour. Yeah. Instead of 35, 40 is what everyone drives. Unless there's a police officer that's patrolling and they happen to see him.
Yeah. So, Mayor Walters, when is that traffic study getting put together?
I would say late spring.
Okay.
It's going to take a while. Yeah. They're going to do not just traffic counts, but they're going to look at traffic flow, ingress, egress to the businesses. each intersection, even pedestrian counts. So it's going to be quite extensive. However, that's really what you need to make a good decision.
Yeah.
And how long will that take, do you think? Is that planned?
Is that months? Months and months?
Yeah. It could be months, yeah, because you want to get a good snapshot.
Yep.
Now, I'm curious with that, along those lines, would any federal funding be used for creating or doing any of this project? If it's not available, you know.
Yeah. Was it thought of? Was it a thought?
Oh, yeah. We have every intention of going after grant money. But, yeah, right now there's a lot of uncertainty with that.
They're too busy trying to pay themselves more money.
Oh.
All the mayor's fault.
Yeah.
Oh. One thing that people don't understand is how much research goes into decisions we make. We don't wake up one morning and say, we're going to just redo the boardwalk and let's throw in an upper boardwalk. And there's so much research that goes in, and talking to consultants and experts, and Don Howdyshell, the kayaker, we get him involved. Just so many people before we make a decision, it's not done willy-nilly. And we have the resources to do the research. So that's why we are making the decisions. And I know from the outside looking in, it might seem like, well, why in the world would they do that? Well, if you give me a half hour of your time, I can explain why. So we have all those tools at our disposal to make good decisions, whereas, like I said, to sometimes the public, they don't see all that.
I think the public also...
To be to Monday quarterback, anything. And it's anybody can complain about anything and say, why didn't you do it that way? Without fully understanding anything behind the project or how any of it works, or even how funding works. You know, someone who complains like that,
they show their ignorance.
It just doesn't make any sense to me.
That's the people who don't understand, like you said, how the funding works and how projects like that work. Or it's, you know, you can't take money from bucket A that's for this and put it into bucket B. That's not how, you know, government budgets work. You know, we can balance our pocketbooks however we want, you know, pull money from savings over to checking, but you can't necessarily do that in a city project, you know. And that's where I think the disconnect happens, and people don't understand that it's not just, I can do this in 2 days, you know, or I can go out and do my sidewalk in a weekend. Well, it doesn't happen at the city level like that.
A classic one is taking money from, like, why you spend all the money on the schools? You should spend it. Well, that's school money that you can't take that and put it to something
or else. Or arts. They look at the sculptures and the arts that are happening down on Front Street. It's a grant.
Yes. Fill potholes. No, that's not how it works.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And Brian knows this, even paving streets. It's very scientific.
Yeah.
I don't just pick a street because my Uncle Bill lives there. So.
Yes, you do, Mayor. Yes, you do.
It's true.
That's what they said.
Yes.
Every segment of every street is rated. And then we pave from the worst to the best as the budget allows. And we're up to $4 million this year. The most, when I took office, they spent 1.5, and we're up to $4 million in paving. And it's scientific. We pave from worst to best. And something I look at and say, oh, this street's terrible. An engineer, a civil engineer, will say, well, no, it just needs a little repair. But then another street that looks okay, it's total base failure to where it's only going to last another year or two, due to the delamination and the alligator cracking and longitudinal fail. There's all these terms that they use to make their decision. So we go with the professional that tells us these are the worst rated streets, and we pay from worst to best. It just makes sense.
Street triage.
Yeah. And that's a significant jump in that budget from 1.5 to 4 million. Is that the cost of materials, or is that just that our budget has increased to allow that?
Yeah, our budget, we've bumped it up purposefully. Mm. So, yeah, the 1.5 is not going to pave what it did 10 years ago due to materials and labor. However, we've never come close to 4 million in the history of the city. And in addition, ODOT's paving Route 8 this year. So if you throw that in, it's zero cost to us. We do all the maintenance, they do the paving. And so that's going to be done, add to the total lane miles that we're doing this year. It's a lot of paving.
And a good amount of it's done in-house. You know, I mean, some of the larger projects, if I remember right, are outsourced, but we have the capabilities to do a lot of the stuff in-house. So we can save a little more money that way.
We have a paver, we have asphalt haulers, and we have rollers, but we can't do really, really big projects.
Yeah, large ones, yeah.
But we do. And we could do some patchwork to where maybe a street is 75% fine. If we can pave the bad areas and buy another 5-6 years out of it, that just makes sense.
And I appreciate the city staff and the engineers and everyone that considers this stuff. Sometimes we use logic too. For a good example, Ward 1 was getting a bunch of Dominion gas pipes laid. So we kind of laid off on doing some of those streets there for a year, and then we did it the following year. So we weren't double paying for that type of situation, as well as the road around the high school, because we knew that construction was coming in. And then when it's time, we get into that area that needs to get it done then.
I want to be shameless to say, we have a ditch street. We need it paved. I know that's not how it works.
No, I know. What you do is you contact Susan and you get the petition.
And you have to go to house to house and you have to try to get it done.
Sure. Yes, Steven.
I know. Gotta
do the work,
but
buddy.
Geez, Steve. Put him on the spot now. Geez.
I know.
We'll blame Brian this time.
I want to go knock on all the doors.
Well, I can be a little bit of introvert sometimes. That's not my favorite thing. So. Yeah. Anything you guys want to add?
Yeah, anything you guys want to ask us?
Any points you feel like you need to make? Or?
We're going to keep doing what we're doing. We're in the best financial shape we've ever been into. I tell people sometimes that we have too much money. And they say, well, that's absolutely.
You don't say. Don't say.
Never enough money.
Too much
surplus
money.
Surplus is good.
But here's the dilemma. So, number one, we're not a bank. We don't want to hoard money. We're supposed to spend it the best way possible on residents. We get that. However, if you go on a hiring spree and you hire 50 people and then there's a downturn, you hate to lay all those people off. So you have to be real careful with what you do with that money. We're hiring 11 additional safety forces this year. We're hiring 6 fire and 5 police, which that's well over $1 million a year forevermore. So those are in addition to the force. But it was something we felt that we had to do. Let's add to the safety forces. Not that we're lacking, but more is always better in safety, right? So yes. We're making that move this year. We still have the most money in the bank we've ever had. And again, we want to be very wise with that. We get good investment income from it, but we don't want to spend it all down and then something bad happens to the economy and now we're in trouble. We always want to be safe.
Are you at liberty to say what the surplus is, or?
$25 million.
Wow.
Okay.
So we have a credit rating just like people do, and they like to see about a 15% carryover, which means 15% of your general fund that you don't spend and you hold it back and you take that into the next year, we were approaching 50%.
Oh, that's a lot.
That's good.
Funds. Wow. And a lot of that's due to the job growth. And then with inflation, we see wage growth. So people are making more money due to inflation. We get 2% income tax. It's a no-brainer.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. The last several years has really seen wage increases.
Mm-hmm. Inflation's been high, and you know it's been trying. It mostly kind of kept up with inflation. Some jobs have, some companies. I want to ask you a couple questions about South Front. I noticed there's a bunch of those lots used to be owned, privately owned. That seems like they've been opened up to public parking. Now, is you know of any plans long term to build another parking deck down there, or any kind of to repave them, or
one that we already own, which we call Hibachi Lot, right across from Hibachi, that's being improved. We do own that. So that'll be proper lighting. It'll be beautiful. A two level, we actually own some all the way up to 2nd Street adjacent to that. We are renting the Lambert Lot, which is all the way to the south, the massive one.
Yeah.
That's $800 a week. And we're leasing that for a year because we know during construction it might put a pinch on some of the parking. So we want to have an overabundance. And then the Superior Auto Lot, which is directly across from Superior Auto, that's $800 a month. And that holds about 30 cars. So we're leasing that as well, all through this construction process. We hired Robert Gibbs, who's a consultant out of Michigan, who was the gentleman we used when we first opened up Front Street. And he's doing a parking analysis. And I believe we have a meeting with him Friday.
Oh, wow.
So he was going to tell us on the south end, what are our future needs for parking? And then we'll be able to make a decision based, again, on an expert.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's good to know.
We drive that 2nd Street that every day, get back and forth
and walk
the highway.
It, walk
and we walk it a lot, too. And we've seen the transformation over the years. We've been in our house since.
It's gotten a lot heavier traffic, and a lot busier.
Sometimes people just walk out in front of your car, too, when they're just, you know, they're just going to a restaurant across the house.
Yeah.
So that concerns me. I'm worried someone's going to get hit. There's a couple places where there's no crosswalks where people just naturally cross their lot. And that's worrisome.
I wonder, is that going to be part of that parking study, crosswalks?
Well, where the parking is, yeah, we'll have to add crosswalks where the parking does finalize.
Okay.
So we do want to cross from Hibachi. We already own that. Will we need to buy more? We're not sure.
Okay.
So we didn't want to buy it when we don't need it. We are going to maximize on-street parking. So if you look at 2nd Street, has a lot of turn lanes at Chestnut, and a lot of those are not needed. So we can have more parking on 2nd Street, and then we're actually going to have to meter the spots on Front Street. And again, that's not for revenue, that's for turnover. So with the condos going in that Test is building, you can't possibly have people sitting for 8 hours taking up prime parking on the street. That's for the businesses. So the parking meters are to get them in 2 hours, get them out, get the next customer in to spend money. So we're going to have to meter everything on Front Street.
Oh boy. I know the monies at the other end of Front Street were for like city beautification. Is that still ongoing? That meter money?
Yeah.
Okay.
So
gotta spin it, Mr. Mayor.
It's a good gauge to see what month was busier. We collect those twice a week. What month was busy, what month was slow. It's good to compare the parking meter revenue, because that's a good tool as to how many people were actually downtown.
Oh, that's interesting.
A lot.
That's an interesting metric.
Or parking.
People are already mad. It's all about Front Street. Well, people are already pissed off about it.
Well, obviously not mad enough, because it's going to be a clean sweep of the Dems. Everyone's voting for you guys, and they're obviously very happy with the job that you guys are doing with our leadership. So, you know, keep going.
My secret has been try and treat everyone fairly, be respectful to everyone, and don't get in big debates over the national political issues. It's just, I represent everyone in the whole city, and so does Brian, not just half. Mm-hmm. So we try and stay out of the national politics and do what's right for Cuyahoga Falls, and I think people respect that.
It's very obvious. That is very obvious.
I think there's another important thing, too, that, you know, we have the leadership of the mayor, and through that, too, we have such amazing city employees that are constantly working behind the scenes to make sure everything for all of us works, too. And I don't think they get enough credit. They make all of our jobs significantly easier, from the law department, community development, to all the other different departments. And they're all amazing, too.
Yeah, we're blessed.
Yeah, Falls is an awesome town.
Yeah, we have a lot friends that we have a bunch of friends that live in Columbus, and they live in Cincinnati and down south. And they have their little local neighborhoods aren't anything like what we have here. We have a pretty, pretty wonderful progressive city, and I'm very proud to live here. So I'm happy.
Well, both Mr. Walters, Mr. Ashton, thank you for joining us this week. And it proves not only this conversation, but just again, the past years of service proved how well such a great city council we have. And honestly, I can say for myself, I can't wait what the next couple of years brings.
Thanks for being here with us.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good night.
Bye, guys.
FallsCast is a production of the Falls Free Press in Cuyahoga Falls, Ohio. Please check out the Falls Free Press at fallsfreepress.com or on social media at facebook.com/fallsfreepress. We thank you for listening to this episode, which was recorded and edited by Bart Sullivan. Please subscribe to our podcast and tell your Cuyahoga Falls friends and family so they can listen as well.